This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Then it simply means that nobody understands anything. At least together, where it gets difficult, people shout. What we need to do with difficult concepts like that is to work them over and over in different contexts and different shiurim and different situations, so that over the months and over the years these concepts become intelligible. Whenever we deal with a newish concept, it's unlikely that most of you will be grasping it the first time. The revision, the reintroduction of older ideas we've developed into the newer shiurim is a very important part of the whole development. In any event, whenever we do deal with old themes and new shiurim, it's always with a new light to it and with a new angle. The Rosh Hashanah time is a time when one is particularly worried, in fact, that the brief moments that one has for droshes and the sometimes deep and difficult concepts that one wants to put across in that time can make it difficult to understand them properly. And I thought to myself that I'm very, very fortunate in that sense, in that I have the opportunity in our setup to be able to introduce you to the concepts beforehand, so that by the time we deal with them on Rosh Hashanah, you've already got the background with which to handle them. And that in the brief droshes, they'll fit into their settings in a way that will make them easier to cope with. And that's what I plan to do this evening, to introduce you to part of the theme of the droshes for Rosh Hashanah. And that emerges from a question which Mr. Michael King asked me this morning on a Rashi at the end of the sefer, where the Torah tells us, after warning us, behold, I've put before you this day life and good, death and evil. And if you don't follow in my ways, you will surely perish. You will not have a long stay on the land which you are now crossing the Jordan to enter. I have called in as witnesses today, heaven and earth, that I have put before you this day life and death, blessing and curse, and you shall choose life in order that you shall live, you and your children. And Rashi says, Amar le HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael, Ribbono Shel Olam said to Yisrael, Histaklu Bashamayim, look at the sky, Sheborasi, which I have created, L'shamesh Eschem, to serve you. Shema Shonu is Midoso? Has the heaven ever changed its conduct? Shema Loi Olo Galgal Chamo Min Amizra V'Hiyad V'Chol Ha'ilo? Has it ever happened that the sun has not risen in the east and given light to the world? Istaklu Boret Sheboras. Look at the land which I have created, L'shamesh Eschem, to serve you. Shema Shinto Midoso? Has it ever changed its conduct? Shema Zorosem Oiso V'Litzomcho? Have you ever put seed into it and it hasn't grown? Shema Zoratem Chitim V'Hel Sosoirim? Or have you ever planted wheat and barley would have grown? Uma Eilu Shenasu Loi Lischar V'Loi Lehetzer? And what if these which were created for no reward and for no loss, Im Zoichi Enein Mekabdim Schar, if they do their job properly, they get no reward for it. And if they sin, they are not punished. And yet they haven't changed their conduct. they are absolutely faithful and loyal to their functions. Atem, you, shim zachisem tekab duschar vim chatosem tekab dupurons, you who, if you are worthy, will obtain reward, and if you sin, you will be punished. Halachas kama v'kama, how much more so must you be faithful to your function and not change your conduct? Very strange Rashi, Sifri. Firstly, what's the Kal v'chomer? I think this question we in fact asked once before, not so long ago, and we dealt with it. What's the Kal v'chomer? What's the how much more so? The sun and the earth, does it have a yetzahara? Does it have any inclination to do wrong? The sun and the earth, does it have bechira? Does it have free choice? What's the Kal v'chomer? If the sun and the earth, who has no reward and punishment, does its job without deviation, how much more so you who do have reward and punishment? Thank you, but we have a healthy yetzahara as well. We have distractions, we have other desires, and we have free choice. We have the ability to disobey you. They don't have the ability to disobey you. What's the Kal v'chomer? The second question is it so clear that the son has never disobeyed the Ribbono Shel Olam? The Gemara says in Sanhedrin that you Omar Rava, my dichtiv, what does it mean when it says in Habakkuk, Shemesh Yoreach, Omar Zavulo, the sun and the moon stood, sun with the moon stood in Zavul, Lo'ur Chitzecho Yahalechu, by the light of your arrows they moved. What does that mean? Melamed She'olu Shemesh V'yoreach L'Zavul. It teaches us, says the Gemara, that the sun and the moon went up to Zvul, which is one of the higher levels of Shemayim, in the heavens and the skies. Zvul is quite a way up, much higher than the sun and the moon's normal area of operation. Omru Lefonov, and this took place at the time of the Machlokes of Korach. When Korach was challenging the authority of Moshe Rabbeinu, this is when the sun and the moon took their trip upwards. Omru Lefonov, they said to him, Ribbono Shel Olam, Im ato yisedin leben Amram, neitzeh. If you will do justice for the son of Amram, for Moshe, if you will prove his point and save his reputation, we'll go back and we'll carry on working. V'im lav, lo neitzeh. And if you're not going to do that, we're not moving from here ever. Sounds a little bit behind you like the UDF. Release Mandela and we'll work. Don't release Mandela, we won't. Stay at home. Where do they get such a thing from? And Shezorak Boim Chitzit. And so the Ribbono Shel Olam threw arrows at them. Omar Elohim, and he said to them, Bichvoid Eloi Mechisen. My honor you weren't worried about. Bichvoid Vosu Vadam Mechisen. For human honor you're worried. Rashi explains. Every day that there are people who stand, kings who stand and bow down to the sun and the moon, to you, and serve you, to my discredit and to my humiliation, then you never went on strike. That you quite enjoyed. But the moment Ben Amram, a human being, is in trouble, then you start threatening strikes. Get out and carry on working. But we see that the sun and the moon did disobey once, even for a short period of time. And what does that mean? How does it disobey? It doesn't disobey. What is it? There's another time that the sun didn't behave quite normally. It was, of course, with the episode with Yehoshua. And before Yehoshua got the sun to stop in its tracks, he also had quite a lot of negotiating and bargaining to do. It wasn't so simple. Says the Medrash in Yalkut Shimoni in Yeshua chapter Yud, Misho Shashemesh Zoreach Ad Shehu Shokeah, from the time that the sun shines until it sets, Mekales LaHakodesh Baruch Hu, the sun is praising the Ribbono Shel Olam. But we also need to understand that concept. What does it mean? Bechainat Mitzay, and say you will find the Shor Sheomad Yehoshua begiven, when Yehoshua stood at Givon, will be Kesh Leshatek Esachamo, and he sought to paralyze the sun. Loi Omar Shemesh begiven Amoid. He didn't say, sun in Givon stands still. Elo Shemesh begiven Doim. He said, sun in Givon, be silent. So you see that the sun is not normally silent, and his instruction was to keep quiet, not to stand still. Elobat, kol shor shehu mahalich hu mekalis laKadosh Baruch Hu. Every moment that the sun is in motion, it's praising the Ribbono Shel Olam. V'chol shor shehu mekalis, and for as long as it is praising, yesh bo koyach le'amod, it has the ability to stop. L'kach omer Yehoshua don. Therefore Yehoshua said, stop praising. There are a number of misprints in the Yalkut Shimoni, various new editions that they are busy working on to try and correct some of those misprints. The father of Rabbi Finkel, who comes here, was a big expert on Yalkut Shimoni and devoted a tremendous amount of time and effort to it. And he has manuscripts of some of his father's notes and corrections, which unfortunately have never been published, and who knows whether they ever will be. And it's possible that here also there's a slight misprint. It doesn't make much difference to the way we understand it. That the chol shor shehu mekalis, as long as the sun is praising, ein bo koyach la'amid, it does not have the ability to stand still. That's why Yehoshua said to the sun, stop praising. So that when it stops praising, it will automatically stand still. That would be more likely, but I don't have any authority. The new texts haven't got as far as this yet. So even if it's as it's written here, that's the way we understand it. The whole shosh from the kalis, and even while it's praising Yesh Bo Koyach La'amid, it has the potential to stand still. Just the next word is difficult then. Lekach Omar Yehoshua Zoyim. Therefore Yehoshua said, stand still. The word therefore is a bit difficult the way we've got it printed here. But the meaning is the same. Yehoshua told the son, stop praising, and consequently it would stand still. What's the sun's praise? What's it standing still and it's moving? There is what we call nature. And one of the pillars of nature as we see it, the very foundation of nature as we experience it, is the orbit of the sun. Chazal talked about the orbit of the sun, and not necessarily because they believe that it's the sun that goes around the earth, but for the sake of calculation it's simpler to see it that way. And in fact, I believe from a point of view of physics, it's not really clear what goes around what. It depends what your frame of reference is. If your frame of reference is the sun, then the earth goes around the sun. If you say your frame of reference is the earth, then the sun goes around the earth. But we call it the Galgal HaShemesh, the orbit of the sun. The orbit of the sun is responsible not so much for the years, because it doesn't affect the years as much as the moon affects the years. The moon creates the month unit, and 12 month units create a year. That's how we figure out the year. The sun is responsible for the day and night, and it's also responsible, and this is its most important function, for the seasons, for the four tikufos of the year. Because of its movement, it's responsible for the summer and the winter and the spring and the autumn, for the effect on agriculture. That the sun is all responsible for. So all of nature, as we know it, is affected primarily by the sun. The sun is also totally predictable. Its orbit is very precise and constant. There are no changes. It stays the same. Unlike the moon, that gets bigger and gets smaller. The 12 solar months are simply the lining up of the line of sight from the earth to the sun, and the constellations behind it, The sun passes through a belt of 12 constellations, and it finds itself, you lined up, if you look from the earth to the sun and back, carry the line onwards, you'll find that each constellation is in direct line of vision for a period of 1 month. That's how the solar months were created. That's very artificial, that's not really a concept of a Jewish month. But what's interesting is the strange interrelationship between our two calendars. Because we do also use the solar calendar in the Torah. The Yom Tovim have to be at particular times in the solar year. It's not like the Muslims that follow only a lunar calendar. And so, okay, well, even there I think there's a little bit of tying up. With us it is important that there's a degree of consciousness and awareness of the solar calendar. Rosh Hashanah is a solar new year, primarily. Nisan is a lunar new year. Chodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodoshim. This, the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh was given for Rosh Chodesh Nisan. That's when we started counting lunar years. Solar years we started counting with the creation of the world, which we take on as being in Tishrei. What is the kilus of the sun, this praising of the Ribono Shel Olam that the Medrash refers to, the sun performs? Imagine that the sun was unpredictable. Sometimes it would rise and sometimes it wouldn't. Sometimes it would rise in the east and sometimes it would rise in the west. Sometimes in the north, sometimes in the south. You never know where it's going to come. And imagine that the scientists, despite all their efforts, were unable to analyze and discover any formula to explain and to predict the passage of the sun. Completely chaotic. Then, from the point of view of the analysis of nature, we would have no indication that there's a Ribono Shel Olam. Chaotic. It's all by chance. Scientists, there are scientists that even believe with things as they are, things happen by chance. One of the examples that I think Rav Dessler used to give is, it's like saying that there never was a fellow called Shakespeare. What really happened was that there was a big piece of paper and there was a pot of ink, and somebody walked past and knocked the pot of ink over on the piece of paper, and it happened to land up in the form of the letters which today we call Shakespeare. Massive coincidence, it happened. So absurd it is to take something as orderly as the universe and claim that it had no creator. Order, seder, is the greatest evidence of a mesader, of a barabos, of somebody who creates that order. Because there has to be a governor, there has to be somebody governing a situation in order for there to be order there. Leaving things to chance never ever creates order. It's against nature for order to be created by chance. The statistical possibilities for such a thing are just so remote that it never ever happens. That order is created out of chaos, purely coincidental. And so, if one looks at it, the epitome of the order of nature is the Galgal Hashemesh, is the orbit of the sun, which does not mean only the sun, it means the sun, the constellations, the general astronomical makeup of the world. That's one of the biggest signs as far as we're concerned, where we would be obligated to discover the Ribono Shel Olam even if we didn't know about it. The meticulousness of that seder, the feat of engineering, kaviyachol, so to say. Each body in its particular place, in its particular function, moving in its particular ways, in a system which is totally predictable, totally predictable, and 100% orderly, and has been for, we say, thousands of years, and the scientists say millions of years, which makes the existence of the Ribono Shel Olam even clearer. We say we only know it's been going like this for a few thousands of years, and they say billions of years it's been going like this. What greater proof can there be for the Ribono Shel Olam than that? Billions of years, everything exactly in its right place. Nothing wears out. Nothing changes. Nothing of course. The Galgal Hashemesh, nature, is one of the clearest manifestations of the existence of the Ribono Shel Olam. Says the sun to Yeshua, as long as I keep on course, people will see the Ribono Shel Olam
in nature.
People will see the Ribbono Shel Olam through me. That's my kiddush, that's how I praise the Ribbono Shel Olam. I bring people to Emunah through the fact that they see that I'm totally predictable, that I never move off. So there must be somebody who's put me into this orbit, who's put me into this order. There must be somebody who's made the program. To have a program which functions over and over and over again, and never, there's no bug in it, nothing ever goes wrong with it. All these years, you know, there must have been a programmer. You can't just leave a computer alone and set it on a time switch that the, or get another computer to randomly knock its keys and expect the program to come out of it. The program is taking Seder and putting an order into an unorderly bunch of facts. And the greater the order, the more effective is the program. And what it means is the greater the programmer. So the greater the order, the Seder of this world, the greater the programmer. The programmer is the Ribbono Shel Olam, says the sun, I dare not deviate. The moment I deviate, you know what the scientists will say? Oh, we told you it was coincidence. Look, sometimes he's there, sometimes he's not. Just so happens, for the last billion years he's been going around, now things are changing, there's no Ribbono Shel Olam, there's no Balabos, there's no Seder. But the sun, I can't move. Says Yeshua, don't worry. Amalei Hashemesh, Ata Omer Lidoim. The sun said to Yeshua, you're telling me to keep quiet. Yesh Kotzon Peseach Piv Omer Legodol Emen Lidoim. Have you ever heard of a minority telling a majority to shut up? It's like a Judea. Well, you've never heard of such a thing, says the sun. You telling me? And in any case, who was here first? Ani nivreisi baravi. I was here, we were created on the Wednesday. Ve'ato nivreisi bashishi, and you were created on Friday. Ve'ato omer li doim. And you telling me to keep quiet? I will dictate the terms here, not you, you and you come. Amale Yeshua, says Yeshua, ben chayrin koton sheish le'evet zokin, en reina l'shteik. A little free man who has an old slave, isn't he entitled to say to him, shut up? Who's working for who over here? Who's employing who? The fact that you were here before me, do you think that's important? What's important is you were here to serve me. I have the rights over you. I am able to direct you, and I'm telling you to keep quiet. Boikonu Avraham Avinu Hashemayim v'chol ma shebetoichoi. Didn't Avraham Avinu acquire the heavens and everything that was in it? Shenema Baruch Avram the Kelelio and Kene Shemayim Voritz. Blessed be Avram to the high God, owner of heaven and earth. That was what was said about Avram, not about the Ribbono Shel Olam. The same Shvach that we say about the Ribbono Shel Olam, Kene Shemayim Voritz, was said and is recorded in the Torah about Avram Avinu, he who has mastered heaven and earth. Don't forget how you bowed down like a slave before Yosef. How Yosef saw in his vision you and the moon and 11 stars bowing down to him. So what are you coming to me with plans that I can't tell you what to do? All this is going on while the battle is raging and Yeshua is running out of time. It's about to be nightfall. Amalei Hashemesh, so the sun tries one more time. Ata Omer She'edem, you say I should keep quiet. Me Omer Kiddusha Shlakish Baruch Hu. Who then will say the praise of the Ribbono Shel Olam? Do you realize what a field day the scientists are going to have if I stop? Do you realize that will be the beginning of atheism and the end of Emunah? How can you say something so irresponsible? Omale, he said, Shesek Vani Omer. You keep quiet, I'll do the praising. Leave it to me. None of your business. How can Yeshua do that which the sun was doing? It's a different job. Yeshua can also praise, but it's a different song. The sun was praising, was singing the song of continuity, of determination, of consistency, of Seder. And Yeshua is disturbing that Seder. What's he going to teach? What's he going to say? But there's one lesson, even greater than the lesson of nature. That nature is continuous. That nature is the epitome of Seder. That's a wonderful lesson from which we can learn an awful lot. But we can learn even more from the fact that there are human beings who can interfere with nature. There are human beings who can dominate nature. There are human beings who can alter the course of this unalterable nature. There's no greater lesson than that. Says Yahushua, when people will see that I, who am a tzaddik, am able to divert you from your course, then people will know who's Balabas. Then people will know that there's a Ribbono Shel Olam in this world. Don't worry about the praise to the Ribbono Shel Olam. There'll be more praise this way than there would be any other way. This is not a chaotic stopping of the sun. This is a tzaddik mastering nature in the Alpha. The Medrash says in Bereishis that Tznai Hipnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Tzichol Ma'aseh Bara B'Sheishis Yimei Bereishis. The Ribbono Shel Olam made a condition with everything he created during the 6 days of creation that there are times when they will be called upon to alter their course, such as this occasion here, the splitting of the Red Sea, and so on. We can now understand Pshat in the Gemara and Sanhedrin. The sun thought, when Moshe said to Korach, "Boker vidatem," tomorrow morning you'll know who's who. Moshe was challenged in the late afternoon by Korach and his community. And Moshe turns around and says, "Let's sleep over this. Tomorrow morning you'll know what's what." The sun thought this was the time he was being called upon by a tzaddik, as was made conditional to him at the time of Bereshit, that there are times when he will have to deviate from his function in order to fulfill the words of a tzaddik. And the son felt this was the time. Moshe had now put his whole reputation in the hands of the next morning. Says the son, "Ribbono Shel Olam, until you promise me that comes morning, things will be clarified over there, there's not going to be a morning. We're staying right here." Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, "This is not your time yet. It's not your time to worry about my honor. There will be other times that you'll have to stand for. At this time, you go back and do your job." What do we see here? We see two aspects to nature. The Akedah calls it Teva Rishon and Teva Sheni, first nature and second nature. We've once before dealt with that Akedah. First nature is the unalterable, systematic, day by day functioning of nature in an absolutely predictable manner. That's first nature. Second nature is the responsiveness of nature to the deeds of man. Second nature, which follows different rules altogether. The sun says, the greatest lesson to the creation is the continuity of nature. The first nature, Teva Rishon, that's the greatest lesson that there is to humanity, that there is a Ribbono Shel Olam, that there is a Masada. Says Yeshua, no. An even greater lesson is Teva Sheni, that nature responds to tzaddikim. And when a tzaddik wants an alteration in nature, he's able to achieve it. That's an even greater lesson. Let's now understand our Rashi. Omer le'akadosh Baruch Hu l'Yisrael, Hispaklu b'shamayim shebarasi l'shamesh etchem. Look in the heaven which I have created serve you. Note, that is its function. The function of heaven is to serve you. Shema shomeris midoso? Has heaven ever changed its conduct? Shema loy olo galgal chamo min amizroch v'heir l'chol ha'ilom? Has it ever happened that the sun has not risen in the east and given life to all the world? Hispaklu b'oret shebarasi l'shamesh etchem. Look at the earth which I have created to serve you. Shema Shinto Midoso, Shema Zeratim Isov, Leitzonko, Shema Zeratim Kitim, Beleisos, Behelto, Sahirim. Has it ever changed its conduct? Have you ever planted and it has not brought forth? Have you ever planted wheat and barley has grown? Ma'ilu Shunasu, Loidishar, Beleisah. What if these that were created not for reward and not for punishment? Or not for reward and not for loss, in Zoychin and Mekabdin Tzchayav, in Chitin and Mekabdin Puronus. If they merit it, they get no reward. If they sin, they get no punishment. Loi Shonu is Midoso. They have not changed their conduct. Atem you, Sheim Zechitzen Tekabdu Tzchayav, in Chatozen Tekabdu Puronus, Halachas Kama Vekama. You, if you have been worthy, will achieve reward, and if you sin, will be punished. How much more so? If you were dealing, says the Ribbono Shel Olam, with unpredictable nature, with chaotic nature, with nature that had its own rules, that functioned by its own systems, you would have no measure of experiencing response from nature. You would be wicked, and it might or might not rain. And if it didn't rain, and if there was famine, you wouldn't attribute it to your deeds, because nature is unpredictable. So if there's famine, it's coincidental. And if you're righteous and the rains come and there's plenty, you won't attribute it to your deeds, because nature is unpredictable. But you're not dealing with such a nature. You're dealing with a nature that, although it has nothing to gain or nothing to lose by being systematic, nature would be just as happily off if it was chaotic. It doesn't make any difference to the sun if it always rises in exactly the same position, or if it changes a little bit. If the tilt of the earth was such that it wobbled a little bit, and that you never knew quite where the sun was going to rise in the morning, it wouldn't bother the sun in any way, it wouldn't bother nature in any way. So why is it so meticulous that you can time it to a thousandth of a second, exactly when and where each sun and each day the sun will be, and every star will be at any moment? Why is that so? So that you can experience tzchar and puronus. The reward and punishment which this section of the Torah is talking about is not reward and punishment in the world to come. It talks very clearly. You will not have length of days on the land which you're crossing the Jordan to come there to inherit. There can be no mistake. This is Eretz Israel, the Jordan that you'll cross, this world here. And when it talks about life and death and good and bad, it's thought broken, klola, blessing and curse. It's talking about material blessing and material curse. Nothing supernatural here. No Elam Haba we're talking about. Just the degree to which nature is going to respond to your actions. If you see that nature, which has nothing to gain or nothing to lose from being consistent, is nevertheless consistent, yet you find that at the moment you move from consistency, there is effect, things happen. The moment you do something which is ethically incorrect, you feel the response from nature itself. The moment you do something which is ethically good, you feel the response from nature itself. And here we have the second nature developing. Despite the fact that nature is totally predictable, you can change it by your conduct. How is it possible that you're ever going to be in any way inconsistent in your behavior? The predictability of science and the freedom of man, the unpredictability of man, form a union here in this chazal, which creates the basis of a Torah life. If science were unpredictable, we would have no feeling of what's right and what's wrong. If we were totally predictable, we would have no ability to be right and wrong. We have the ability to do as we please, to alter our own conduct. And we have the ability to see that alteration mirrored in science, to see nature around us respond to us in accordance with our actions. The lunar cycle, by the way, represents the second nature. The lunar cycle is representative of the human being, of our effect on nature. Firstly, it's never the same, while it's also predictable to a degree. Every day the moon is different. The sun is exactly the same day after day. And most important of all, Rosh Chodesh is fixed by us. By our declarations, we affect when the new moon is. The solar year doesn't need us. Shabbos is a solar function. Every seventh cycle of the sun around the earth, every seventh cycle of the earth on its own axis, however you want to see it, is a Shabbos. It doesn't need our kiddush, it doesn't need anything. Shabbos comes in with or without us. It functions independently of us in a totally predictable manner. But the moon doesn't. The lunar calendar needs us. We affect the lunar calendar to a very great degree, and that we'll discuss further on Rosh Hashanah, the extent to which we affect the lunar calendar, and the extent to which we have to synchronize these two systems, the lunar system and the solar system, which astronomically and from a calendar point of view are in fact synthesized once in 84 years, but we have to work towards that synthesization, to that synchronization. How and why we have to synchronize these two time systems and these two calendars, that we'll talk a little bit more about on Rosh Hashanah and Yud Sashin. But what we see is the existence of these two. Nature is seeing on the one hand its predictability as the essence of the truth of the Ribbono Shel Olam's existence, and man seeing his mastery of nature as still greater proof of the Ribbono Shel Olam's existence. The fact that that can be done, that nature and mastery of nature are two systems that function side by side, that's something which has to be appreciated. And perhaps most important in this little Rashi is the Kal Vachomer itself. We say that there is nothing more predictable than the rising and the setting of the sun. The movement of the sun cycle is so totally programmed and preordained that it would shock us if there was the slightest deviation. We expect it that way, and we would be totally shocked, and it would arouse the amazement of scientists throughout the world who would be unable to solve it if the sun started behaving in an unpredictable fashion. And yet, the Sifri tells us in Rashi that unpredictability of human behavior is even more amazing. We started off and we asked, we have a Yetzer Hara, the sun and the moon don't. We have distractions, we have other needs, other desires. We have free will, the sun and the moon doesn't. It's true we have free will, and it's true we have a Yetzer Hara. And if that's all we had, the Kal Vachomer wouldn't work. If that's all we had, then of course it is more correct that the sun should be predictable than that we should be predictable. The sun has no Yetzer Hara. The Gemara says, Barasi Yetzer Hara, Barasi Tavlin Kinegu. I've made a Yetzer Hara, but I've also made an antidote for it. Ribbono Shel Olam didn't leave us with nothing to cancel out the effects of the Yetzer Hara. The Ribbono Shel Olam gave us a Torah. And the important underlying theme of the Torah is the responsiveness of nature and the Ribbono Shel Olam to our actions. And once a human being knows that with all his free will and with all his Yetzer Hara, if he really knew the degree to which the world responded to him and to which the Ribbono Shel Olam responded to him, there's no way he could possibly deviate. And as far as we take it for granted that the sun won't deviate, it should be taken much more for granted that a human being won't deviate. And the only reason he does deviate is because he doesn't know the responsiveness, he doesn't appreciate the extent of the responsiveness of the world to his actions. What person would then stick his hand into a fire, take a big fire, and take sensible, fully grown adult, put him next to the fire, and put a diamond in the fire, and take bets. Is he going to put his hand into the furnace to take the diamond out, or isn't he? See if there's anybody who would predict that he would put his hand into the furnace. Everybody knows he wouldn't. But he has free will. But he has a Yetzer Hara, a diamond, with hundreds of thousands of dollars. Not rand, dollars. And it's there in front of him, 2 feet away from him. Surely there would be some debate in the room. 100 people sitting in the room, maybe there'd be one person who would be prepared to put money on the bet that he's going to put his hand in. Nobody. Why not? Free will, Yetzer Hara, all there. He knows what it's going to cost him. That diamond's going to cost him his life, probably. That he's not prepared to do. So it would be with anything else that we understood clearly. If we understood the consequences of our actions, the Yetzer Hara would cease to exist. No, it would be no challenge for us. Would we consider putting our hand in there? Absolutely not. It's as predictable as the sun. So predictable is it that our fellow here is not going to put his hand into the furnace. Don't say that human beings aren't predictable. Human beings are only unpredictable when they don't have a conscience. Then they're unpredictable. They can do anything. When they don't understand what they're playing with, when they don't see the fire, they're unpredictable. They can destroy worlds. But a human being who is responsible, a human being who does foresee consequence, a human being who does understand the responsiveness of the world to his actions, is totally predictable. He will act within a certain framework, and he will act within that conscience. We discussed last night how the awareness of punishment is in fact our opening on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. If we don't really believe in reward and punishment, if we don't really believe in the responsiveness of the Ribbono Shel Olam to our actions, there's no way we can claim that we did anything by mistake. Because what you ask when you check out, if somebody does something by mistake, you say, oh, you say yes. You say, would you do it again? The person says no. Then you know it was a mistake. He didn't. For some insane reasons we discussed last night. But if a person doesn't believe in reward and punishment, and he puts his hands into the cookie jar in his court, and he says, I'm sorry, it was a mistake. And you say to him, 1 second, it was a mistake. Are you sorry you did it? He says, I'm not sorry I did it, I'm sorry I got caught. That's what I'm sorry about. And we say to him, do you believe you would get caught if you did it again? He says, never. I've learned my lesson. And I'll never get caught when I do it again. And you say, 1 second, does that imply that you're planning to do it again? He says, sure. I'm just not planning to get caught again, that's all. There goes shaking. Then you say, in that case, my friend, that wasn't a mistake that you did. That was deliberate. The mistake was getting caught. The mistake wasn't the action. We ruin our chances of claiming that we did something by mistake if we don't believe in reward and punishment. We need to understand that belief in reward and punishment has become old-fashioned. And that in Torah circles today, there are a lot of people, new Torah circles, that try and present, in order to make it feel a little bit less oppressive and more gay and attractive, forget a little bit about the reward and punishment. The Ribbono Shel Olam loves us all, and we love him, and we'll do our best, and he understands, and that's how it is. What we don't understand is what we're destroying with that approach. The first thing you destroy is the ability of the person to come and find Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and to say, it was a mistake, Ribbono Shel Olam. I'm sorry, Ribbono Shel Olam, it was a mistake. Because if you believe that the Ribbono Shel Olam understands and he forgives and he's always smiling and you're always smiling and we love him and he loves us, then what are you going to say? It was a mistake. And are you going to do it again? Well, sure, if the Yetzer gets big enough, I'll do it again. Why not? You're always smiling. Even when I do it, you're smiling and you love me just the same, so why shouldn't I do it? To offload our Averis, to offload them onto the, and put them on the scale as shaykh again, as mistakes that we made, we don't know what got into us. For that we need to say, be able to say to the Ribbono Shel Olam, do you think I would have done it deliberately? I know what punishment there awaits a person who does these kind of things. I'm aware of it. I have nightmares about it. Do you think any sane person would do such a thing deliberately? Of course it was deliberate. How could it possibly be deliberate? I see the punishment as clearly as that furnace with a diamond inside it. So how could it have been deliberate? I must have been drugged when I did it. I don't know how I did it. Then you slap. So you're out of control of yourself when you did it. You don't know how you did it. You're conscious of reward and punishment, so you couldn't possibly have done it deliberately. You're not insane altogether. So lastly, I forgive you. But the human being who isn't conscious of reward and punishment, who isn't conscious of she'im zachisem to kablu sahar v'im chatosem to kablu puronis, that if you're worthy, you get reward, and if you're not, you get punishment. You get punished. Such a person cannot say, shogeg ha'yisi, I did it by mistake. He can't say it. He's going to say, I got caught by mistake. Well, I did it by mistake. We have to follow the old-fashioned teachings of Yiddishkeit. We have to know that the way Yiddishkeit was taught to our grandparents and to our great-grandparents and to our great-great-grandparents, that's the way Yiddishkeit is meant to be taught. And schar and enish, reward and punishment, was always, and as we see in Chazal, an important part of our education, so it remains an important part of our education today. Anything is, has to be presented correctly. One has to understand it in its correct context. One has to understand it in a way that it doesn't render us impotent with fear and depression, but where it renders us active and enables us to offload ourselves on the contrary and to face the Ribbono Shel Olam with a degree of confidence. If we only really had full appreciation of the effects of reward and punishment, of the responsiveness of nature and of the Ribono Shel Olam to our actions, then we should know that it would be as absurd to consider sinning as it would be to consider that the sun might change its passage. And Yitzhak Hashem, as we go through the coming experience of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and the 10 days in between, it's terribly important that we work on this aspect, that we become aware of the responsibility that our actions carry with them, of the fact that every action has to be accounted for now, and that every action is responded to. Every action, nature responds, the Ribono Shel Olam responds. The little good that we do, there's a major response. The little bad that we do, there's a major response. And as that becomes clear to us, so in the coming year, we will become a little bit more morally predictable. So in the coming year, we'll become a little bit more ethically predictable. We'll know how to deal with one another, because we'll be confident that one with one another, that we understand the consequences of our actions. We will be able to assume when we're dealing with another human being that he's not trying to crook me, because he knows as I know what the consequence of such an action would be. We'll be able to assume when we're dealing with one another that if I'm being advised by you, I'm being advised to the best of my interests, because you know as I know the terrible response that lies in wait for the person who gives advice for his own interest and not for the interest of the person he's advising. But for this confidence in one another, we need to know that we share a common conscience, that we share a common awareness of schar meinish, that we share a common awareness of, that the world responds and that the Ribono Shel Olam responds. And we don't get away with anything. But ultimately, everything has to be accounted for and everything is is paid for. It's that awareness of einish, of punishment, which holds with it also the awareness of schar. If there was a thought that we could get away with our wrongdoings, there would be no meaning to good deeds either. Because we know the responsibility that awaits us, because we know that we can't stick our hands into that furnace, no matter how attractive the diamond looks, and we have no Yetzirah to do it. Our Yetzirah melts away, our desire for the diamond disappears totally, if that's the only way we can do it. So we also know what diamonds and what gems do await for us when we handle the world correctly, when we handle one another correctly, and when we handle ourselves correctly.